Hello, this is Debron Kelso, host of this edition of Nature Now for the third week of January. This week, we are very pleased to have Nancy Slick as our guest, here to speak with us via telephone about edible and medicinal plants. Nancy has long been fascinated with plants and their uses, and has taught various classes through Peninsula College and beyond over the years. We'd like to share some observations of the past week.
The most significant event of the past week was, of course, the snow. What was especially interesting was how erratic it was, with some areas on the peninsula getting just a few inches. To report from Joyce, just above sea level, west of Port Angeles, recording 30 inches of snow. My goodness.
Wow.
It must have come as a great shock to many wildlife species after our mild fall and early winter weather, with the smaller songbirds likely hunkered up somewhere together, keeping each other warm against the storm. I heard a report recently of 31 Pacific wrens found packed together in a nest box for warmth.
Wouldn't you love to see that? In the good news department, biologists released four fishers on January 10th in the Nisqually River watershed of Mount Rainier National Park. Overall, the partnership led by the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, the National Park Service, the U.S. Forest Service, and Conservation Northwest has now met their goal of releasing more than 250 fishers in the Cascade Range on Olympic Peninsula, completing the final phase of a reintroduction program that began in 2008. Fishers, a house cat-sized member of the weasel family, were eliminated from Washington in the mid-1900s through overtrapping and habitat loss. They have been listed as a state endangered species since 1998.
Experts working on the Washington State Fisher Recovery Plan determined that a self-sustaining population was not likely to become reestablished in the state without human intervention, and that reintroductions were the only means of recovery in western Washington. Since 2008, state, federal, and partner biologists have released 85 fishers in the North Cascades region, 90 on the Olympic Peninsula, and 81 in the South Cascades, a significant step forward recovering the species in Washington.
We've had our friend Betsy Howell, wildlife biologist with the Quilcene District of the Olympic National Forest, on to speak with Nature Now a couple of times, focusing on her work with the Fisher Reintroduction and Monitoring Program. And I myself had the great joy of seeing one of these magnificent animals up the Dungeness River Valley a number of years ago. We have high hopes of many more such sightings in future as the species reestablishes itself back in our mountains.
Nan Evans reported on the Christmas bird count here in Port Townsend a few weeks ago, and we promised some updates when the results were tallied from various counts on the Olympic Peninsula. The most comprehensive of the tallies at the moment is from the Olympic Peninsula chapter outside of Squim, where the most abundant birds were hands down American wigeon ducks with nearly 10,800 counted. They are usually very plentiful in our area in the winter, but what was surprising was a number of red-breasted mergansers encountered with a 1,518 tally. Other unusually high numbers were spotted towhees with 627, Anna's hummingbirds with 316, and Wilson's snipe with a startling 34 of these elusive birds counted. Unusually low in the count this year were western gulls, savannah sparrows, brewers, blackbirds, and the non-native starlings and rock pigeons. A total of 139 species were recorded on their chapter's count day on the 16th of December. And if you want to look at the complete count, please go to OlympicPeninsulaAudubon.org and search for 2019 Christmas Bird Count.
And now, let's hear the mystery sound of the week. Isn't this an unusual sound? We'll play it again at the end of the program and tell you what it is. And now on to our main interview for today. Welcome, Nancy.
Thank you so much.
When I was preparing for this interview, Nancy was kind enough to send me several handouts that she used for classes that she's taught over the years on edible and medicinal plants. And they were so fascinating that I'm going to have a hard time narrowing down my questions. Perhaps we should start with asking you, in simplest terms, how do you distinguish between an edible and a medicinal plant?
Well, that's a really good question. A lot of people think of them as separate, but in fact, many of the things that we eat every day are medicinal for us. If you think of carrots with their high levels of vitamin A and oranges with their high level of vitamin C, those, of course, can have medicinal purposes because they offer nutrition. They can also help correct body conditions. So if you look at a plant like stinging nettles, that is a wonderful edible, but it's also very high in iron and can be a treatment for anemia. Similarly, hawthorn berries, technically you could eat them. They are very mealy, but they are extremely medicinal, but you could make a nice jelly out of that. So I think it's important to look at plants as sort of holistic beings who have nutritional value, but also medicinal content.
Yeah, that makes really good sense. So whether we consider a plant more of an edible or used for medicinal purposes, it's important to recognize that different parts of the plant are used for different things, right? In some cases, one part of the plant can be a choice edible and another part of it can be poisonous.
Exactly. And we're all familiar with rhubarb that our grandmothers grow, or perhaps that we grow. And the stem, of course, is edible, but the leaf is toxic. And in the case of medicinal plants, that can also occur. So, for example, the yew plant, that Taxol, the cancer medicine is made of, the entire plant is toxic except for the jelly inside the fruit.
Well, so you told me that, and I had no idea. I don't think of them as having really sweet berries, which is really interesting.
They are an interesting plant, and I strongly urge people not to try it because the pit is very, very toxic. And I have read that if you swallow the pit whole, it should be safe. But if you nick the pit just even a little bit, it can be very, very toxic. And yet the jelly that the pit sits in, it looks like a little red bird's nest, where the nest is the red jelly part, and then the little black pit sits inside there. If you break open the casing for the red part, and could have a use, I suppose, as an edible. I wouldn't, just because of the danger level, but it's an example of something where one part of the plant technically is edible, but the other one is very seriously dangerous. Similarly, elderberries are very medicinal, highly medicinal, but you must cook them. They have toxic glycosides. While they are edible, you have to know, you know, which parts of the plant to use, how to prepare them, and things like that. There's a lot to learn and a lot to know when working with edible and medicinal plants.
Have a precursor to cyanide?
Yes, they have a toxic glycoside in them. And when you cook the berries, that breaks it down to a very safe level. But the entire rest of the plant has that in it. You can eat the flowers raw. They're very, very small amounts of the glycosides. But berries, which are the choice part and the most medicinal part, have to be cooked. So I'm encouraging everyone, if you go out and collect elderberries of whatever color, do not consume them without cooking them first.
Good to know. And you were also telling me about dandelions.
Yes. Dandelions are interesting. That's another example of an edible plant that also has medicinal properties. Technically, you can eat the whole plant, even though it does contain a latex sap. But the leaves are edible. The flowers are edible. I make a beautiful syrup out of the flowers every year, and it's just very light. It's almost like a honey, but without that honey quality to it. And it's delicious.
Oh, I've thought of dandelion wine, but not syrup.
Yeah, it's delicious. It takes a long time to pluck all of the yellow parts of the flower away from the green parts of the flower, which are bitter. But once you've got the syrup, it's so delicious, and it's so fun to have. And another interesting part about dandelions is at the top of the root, where the leaves connect, there's a kind of a nub there, and if go out and collect a bunch of dandelions. Let's say you want to try these wild edibles for the first time, it's a good idea to start with one that's safe, that has no poisonous lookalikes. And so dandelion is a great one to do that with. And so if you go out and say, March and collect a bunch of them, and you clean them all up, and you cut them into their various parts. So you have a little pile of the little flower buds. You can cook those up and eat them. And you have a little pile of the leaves and a little pile of the roots. And if you cut these little nubs off the top of the root and a little pile of those, and you cook those up separately in a little butter and salt, they will taste exactly like artichoke hearts.
Wow. I'm going to do that this spring.
It's true. Indeed. I read about it and I thought, what? That can't be true. And I went out and collected a big basket of them and had all the parts laid out on the counter and cooked them all up. And it's true. They were quite delicious. But that's, again, another example of a plant that, while you can eat all these wonderful parts and it's very, very high in nutrition, it's also a medicinal plant, and it works as a diuretic. So if you are feeling poorly and taking, let's say, your elderberries for helping you with the flu or some other virus, then you also may wish to take some dandelion tea to help flush the system out. So they work together.
Oh, good to know. And clover, too, right?
Yeah, clover is a nice edible to have. Of course, the flowers are edible, and there are lots and lots of different kinds of clover. The thing about eating the clover leaves, though, is that they're very high in cellulose, which is a part of the structural component of the cells. And so they're hard to digest because we don't have a bunch of stomachs to break them down. So if you do eat clover leaves, you can put a few in the salad, but you wouldn't want to serve a salad of clover leaves and have your guests, you know, complaining by the end of the meal that they don't feel good. So that's an example of a plant where it's better to use as a pot herb. So you want to throw that into your soup or eggs.
And you were also telling me about tulips. I didn't realize that the petals are edible.
Yeah, the tulip petals are edible, but you would not want to eat the bulbs. And the neat thing that you can the petals is that you'll say you want to collect a bunch of red petals, and you can whip them up in a blender with some, well, I'm not a chocolatier, so I'm not exact. I don't remember the steps of how this works, but say you take some white chocolate and have that nice and creamy, and you can mix these tulip petals that are all ground up into them, so you get a nice pink or dark red even chocolate. And then you can inflate a balloon and dip the balloon in the chocolate so that it makes like a petal shapes around the circumference of the balloon. And then when it hardens, you could deflate the balloon, and then you have a chocolate tulip flower.
Oh, that you can wouldn't then... that be so beautiful and wonderfully delicious?
Yes, and then you get your tulip sorbet.
Oh, that's great.
There are a lot of neat things that you can do with wild edibles. Another example is there are lots of wild edible flowers, and so you can collect a lot of these flowers, like bachelor buttons and forget-me-nots and rose petals and nasturtiums and calendula and blonde daisy and lots of them, and have all these colors. And then you can have some butter that's room temperature, and you can whip that up so it's soft. And you can sprinkle the petals on some plastic wrap and then put the butter on top of that in a log. And then you roll the saran wrap around the butter so that the log is completely covered on the outside with the petals. And then you chill it. And then when you take it out, you can slice these beautiful slices of butter and put a slice on a plate. And it'll have these beautiful speckled colors of petals all the way around the outside.
Oh, that just sounds gorgeous. We shouldn't forget to mention that some plants in the same families can be edible or medicinal, but relatives can be deadly, like wild carrot. Something that you said that I didn't even think about is that poisonous water hemlock is so toxic that it can render poisonous edible plants downstream, like wild watercress.
So people think, oh, wild edibles, I'm just going to pick at things along the trail while I'm hiking about and eat them. But I recommend against that. There aren't that many things out there that will kill you, and the ones that will only kill you once. But it's a good idea to be prepared and to have knowledge, to be armed with data wherever we can when we're out in the natural world. Nature's beautiful, but she can be quite deadly. And the parsley or carrot family is the family that the Queen Anne's lace, which has the edible root in it, which is the wild carrot, is in the same family as poison hemlock, which you find in a field, and poison water hemlock that you find in waterways. They are not to be toyed with. When I teach my classes, I don't even touch them. I try to use a stick or something to bend the plant over to show how they have purple striations on the stem. Like if you were going to go into, say, a creek and collect some wild watercress, I recommend going upstream a ways and just checking for poison water hemlock to make sure that there isn't any about.
Yeah, that's a really important point. And it's also important to recognize seasonality in dealing with plants, right? For example, in the spring, the plant's directing nutrients and sugars to the newly sprouting buds and leaves, which makes them the most desirable, while in the fall, most of those nutrients are being directed to the roots along with the nuts and seeds, and then these are the most choice parts of the plant, right?
Yeah, so that holds true as it would in your garden as it does in nature. So the dandelion plant in the very early spring, if you go out and collect them in, let's say, March, the new leaves that are coming in will be much more delicious than they will be in August. So the plant is storing its sugars in the root, and then it's going to spend those sugars for its growth purposes and reproductive purposes through the warmer months. And then by the time we get to the hotter month, the plant will be quite edibly bitter. Now, when I teach my dandelion class and cook up dandelions, they have people taste the bitter plant, but then we correct it with this dandelion flower syrup, and that's always an interesting thing to experience. But it is true that plants, they do go through changes through the year, and they can be quite tasty some parts of the year and very much not so other times of the year. Another example of a plant that has edible properties at different times of the year is the cattail. Tail appears, the pollen from the tail is high in protein, and that can be used. Probably heard of.
Ewell Gibbons. Who doesn't remember Ewell Gibbons?
What he used to do, he would go camping with his kids, and he would dig up the rhizomes, and he would make flour out of them, and then he would add the protein from the pollen. He would add the pollen right into the mix and come up with these yellow pancakes that he would make right out there while they were camping. But this is an example of something. You could eat the rhizomes one part of the year, and then later on you could go on and the cattails are up. Time to collect the protein.
Oh, cool.
Of course, if you're in a survival situation, protein is something that you would very much want to have access to if you can. And so knowing which plants have higher protein, like cattail and nettles, it's important to know.
Yes, indeed. And then it's important to consider growing conditions. Well, any good gardener is aware of how important good soils are in sunlight. So rapid growth is usually a source of tenderness and sweetness. And then a plant that's stressed usually grows more slowly and becomes bitter and fibrous, right?
Yes. When I collect wild edibles that I want to have in my yard or medicinal plants that I want to have in my yard, I tend to put them in partly shady areas so that they have more of a gentle growing condition. And some plants, of course, will tolerate direct, harsh heat. Nettles will tolerate that. Sheep sorrel will tolerate that. Even the comfrey I've got will tolerate that. But I think it's a good idea if you've got a shady-ish spot in the yard and you want to create a kind of a wild edible garden, consider using that as an area for plants that prefer or do better in an area that's going to be more gentle for them. If you're gentle with them, they will serve you longer.
Yes. So the last general principle that we should mention is care and where to harvest wild plants. obviously, it shouldn't be on private property or on protected lands such as national parks. But we also need to be careful not to harvest alongside roadways where plants are being sprayed or in other potentially contaminated areas, right?
That's really important. I'm glad you mentioned it. Roadway runoff, culvert runoff, creosote from railroad ties, commercial fertilizers, things like that are not things we want to ingest, of course. People think, oh, I'll hike along the railroad. And that, no, that's not really a recommended place. Or, some corporation has a nice lawn and they've got some things popping up at the edge of it. Not
or,
so much.
Or golf courses are yeah. Just loaded with pesticides and chemicals.
Or off-lead dog parks.
Yeah.
The other thing about collecting, or two points. One is, generally, plants don't prefer to be dug up, so if at all possible, collect the seeds from plants that you find out and about, and then plant those if you are able. Although I have done some plant rescues and rescued some plants from very harsh environments and had them flourish in kinder locations. Another point to be mindful of, you mentioned parks, and whether they're state, local, or national, are resources for all of us to enjoy. So if we all start going out and digging up the Oregon grapes, then there won't be any for everyone else to enjoy. And another thing is that if you do want to go out and harvest some plants, dig them up, I have found a great resource is the timberland. And what I have done is just contact the timber companies directly and ask for permission to collect some specimens. And they're fine with that as long as you're not taking their trees and as long as you're not racing around in recreational vehicles on their forest roads. They are very amenable to that.
Oh, that's great to know. You lucky listeners will be able to hear the second part of this show next month, and which will concentrate on medicinal plants. Thanks so much for joining us, Nancy.
Thank you.
And here's our mystery sound again.
That is the rare sound of a bobcat barking. I've never heard them bark, but in speaking about mystery sounds with my guest, Nancy Slick, before I interviewed, she mentioned that she had heard two bobcats barking at each other at their property above Squim Bay a while ago. Do you often see bobcat at your property, Nancy?
Well, you don't often see them because they're quite elusive, although I have seen them before. But it was really neat to listen to one on one side of the park property barking and hear another one on another side of the property barking back. And we could hear the one travel through the forest, continually barking as it approached its friend. And I thought that was really neat.
Yeah, and they're beautiful animals. I had the great pleasure of seeing the best view ever in my driveway a number of years ago. I looked up and it was there, and I was like, no
way. Wow.
Yeah, they're just gorgeous.
I saw one run across the road once, and it had giant black swirls, and I've never, ever seen even a photograph of one like that.
Yeah, we live in a remarkable place with remarkable creatures. Thank you so much for joining us, and we will look forward to getting out in the field with you in the spring.
It was my pleasure, and I'm looking forward to doing more.
Okay, thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
And that's it for KPTC's Nature Now for the third week of January. Thanks very much for joining us, Nancy, and thanks very much to our sound engineer, Nora Petrich, for helping me today. Thanks also to all of you for listening. Remember, if you missed any of our program or want to listen again, this program will be rebroadcast at 5 p.m. on Thursday, 12:30 on Saturday, and available as a podcast in a week or so at kptz.org. Closing music is Dulaman, which is Irish for channeled wrack, a kind of edible seaweed off the Irish coast. And it's by a group called Celtic Woman. Wishing you all happy trails until we meet again.
sweet the